Hey, this is Billy West, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. You're one stop for this sort of thing. I'll see you in the future. Greetings from the year 3000. It still sucks.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for August 3rd, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
Oh, and I'm Chip Hessenflow.
Yeah, that's how this works, Chip. After I say my name, then you say your name. We're back, everybody. Look, we're back. Too Much Scrolling, the show that you love so much. The eighth year of Too Much Scrolling. We took a year off. We did our wonderful, fantastic book club sandwiches at Irregular Hours with Professor Pam Bedore. And now Too Much Scrolling is back, Chip. This is how this works.
Well, we never really went away. We just had to work with COVID, man, just like everybody else has to work with COVID.
Everybody took a year off, right?
Well, they didn't take a year off. They just worked differently. And we had to find a way to kind of do the best we could. And we created a book club, Sandwiches at Regular Hours, to be able to explore, ultimately, the entire Sherlock Holmes canon. Mm-hmm. And then an entire group of books that we all got a chance to talk about and all those fun interviews with the authors and artists and things of that nature. And you know what? COVID is over, Steve.
Is it? Are you declaring it over? Are you jumping on the Steve bus of declaring the pandemic over until you watch the news this afternoon?
Well, the news this afternoon will change that. But right now, for at least for our listeners, let's just pretend like COVID is over.
That's right. COVID is over. Too much scrolling.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And I've committed, Chip, I'm going to watch a movie every week for the new Too Much Scrolling.
Well, that's a big deal. But, you know, the real challenge with it is we have the Olympics in Japan going on. And, you know, there's so much streaming you have to do during that time. And, of course, you know, we got swimmer Claire Balding's third leg. That was, you know, of course, phenomenal. So, you know, if you're not watching that, maybe you can watch something else.
All right. So everybody needs to get used to the old new format now, and they need to go to the show notes and click on this YouTube link that Chip has added to the show notes to explain the joke about the swimmer's third leg. It's not what you think it is, folks. This is an interview, live television, where the BBC presenter is asking these British young men about their swimming, and she makes a slight faux pas in her vocabulary of swimming, huh, Chip?
Well, the teenage boy in all of us will giggle at this question because they giggled at this question. But they kept a straight face, my friend. They kept going. They didn't really say anything about it.
They thought about it so loudly that we could hear it here in America across the ocean. But yes, the swimmers have been doing great. Simone Biles, big headlines about her choices of what she's going to do with her mental health during the Olympics. I'm watching it a little bit, but we went to the movie theater and watched a movie this week, Chip.
You and I both went to a movie theater. I should mention that I actually canceled AMC Stubs because where I'm currently recording from, the AMC theaters are not particularly good. But the Regal theaters are much better. And Regal has their own monthly fee. And I think I'm going to be joining that so I can watch unlimited movies to be able to prepare for our recordings. But we got to both go see Black Widow.
Yeah, the latest in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the story that we've been waiting for, geez, it's been 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years since we first met Natasha Romanoff and understood about some of her backstory of the Black Widow, and waiting and waiting and waiting for this movie, and we finally got it, and then COVID hit, and they put it on the shelf for almost a year and a half.
And not only did they just put it on the shelf, they kept announcing it, I don't know, every like month or so, like, oh, it's coming out next month. In fact, Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool did a real joke about his movie that's coming out a couple weeks from now, going, didn't that movie already come out? So we kept looking at this movie, and you know, it was released on Disney Plus, but I wasn't willing to pay $29 to watch it.
I would have had my whole family been interested in watching this movie, but my wife and I were the only ones that actually went to the movie theater, and we went on the teacher $6 movie night, so we paid $12 to see it instead of $30.
Well, I spent $10 last night to go see it, and I almost had a private screening, but I had 8 people with me, so it wasn't quite the private screening that I demand when I'm watching a film, Steve.
And that's one of the big questions of the future of movies, is what does the theater industry look like in the future? My theater was virtually empty. There was the wife and me, and then there was another mother and daughter in the theater with us. That's not sustainable. This movie should have drawn a large audience. There was a lot of people who wanted to watch this movie. And I think the Disney Plus numbers were almost equal to the numbers of box office receipts for this film.
Well, I don't know if that means good or bad, because I know that Disney, who owns Marvel, certainly can't be happy with this, but they've got this large group of movies. There's this backup to be able to have them released. And at some point, you've got to pull the plug and actually make it happen. I'll go ahead and start off by saying, I really like this film. This movie, to me, was a 70 out of 100. Mm-hmm. If you like the Marvel movies, if you liked the universe that they built, this is certainly one of the better of those Marvel movies. The big question I'll ask when I say that is, has the zeitgeist of this type of movie passed us now? So I enjoyed it, but it was kind of not a nostalgia play, but certainly something like, is this really relevant now?
I had that feeling the whole way through this, was, is it too late for this movie? Should this movie have been produced a decade ago? Should this movie have been produced when we were producing all of the standalone superheroes that then put together into the Avengers? The Black Widow, they didn't make this movie. And there's a misogynistic problem with making female run movies. This movie, a female director, female writer, almost all female cast, with the exception of David Harbour, who was phenomenal. And if you look at the credits, the number of female humans that worked on this movie is astounding. That's what Marvel should have done at the beginning of this Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I don't think it was misogynistic at all, Steve. And this is the issue, is that we didn't know, I'm sorry, Marvel didn't know, Disney didn't know, whether the Black Widow, which, if Iron Man was a C character, Black Widow certainly was D, E, or F type of character, certainly a support character. They didn't know if this character could hold a movie audience. So what they did improperly is they inserted her into all these other movies. She was a support in all of them. Mm-hmm. And they eventually got to the point where they could get to, they knew they had an audience. They were able to produce Black Panther, and certainly was an incredible, moved him from a C-level character, D-level character, to ultimately, you know, for at least for box office, an A type of character. Too bad for Chadwick Boseman. Mm-hmm. This movie certainly was a very good movie in comparison to, say, Captain Marvel, which certainly was Captain Marvel even a likable character.
Right.
Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh.
Oh, yeah.
Both of them play great Black Widows. Mm-hmm. They've created this entire universe where they can, I mean, as far as the world building, now you've got, you know, if you want to have a Black Widow anywhere in the world, there's somebody who can play Black Widow. It doesn't matter who the person is. Mm-hmm. I mean, they set this up really, really well to create this network of spies. And are they spies that are going to turn on each other or not? I mean, there's there's a lot of play in this. Scarlett Johansson certainly is an incredible, likable person.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of humor, a lot of spark. And you're right. David Harbour plays this guy that is, what can you say? I mean, we saw at the end of Stranger Things, he went to Russia. Now we know what he did.
Isn't that, didn't you think that the whole time? Wasn't he just David Harbour to you the whole time? And weren't you thinking about Stranger Things and the Russia connection the whole time?
So we should also mention they tiptoed all around a little bit of the Cold War. So mm-hmm. for a person who is a young person, has no idea what the Cold War was really about, they may not get what the Soviet Union was doing at that time. They may not get, in fact, I take that back. They immediately said 1995. The Soviet Union had already fallen.
Yeah.
We're dealing with Russia. So the original Black Widow was a Soviet Union defector.
Correct.
Not a Russian defector.
Right.
So anyway, let's mention Rachel Wentz once again in this. She was outstanding. Once again, 70 out of 100. If you like the Marvel movies, this fits in real well. And this is one of the parts of it is, I'm not going to give it away, but at the ending, she picks up in this plane and goes, my assumption, she's going to break out Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with watching a movie like this out of order.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of a prequel kind of feeling to it, and trying to fit it into that old story where, yes, this is where she goes off to go rescue Captain America, and she's wearing
Civil War, right?
Uh-huh.
In Civil War.
And she's wearing her sister's vest.
Ah, was that in the
In the original, when she goes to break out Captain America, she's wearing her sister's vest, and we didn't realize it. We didn't notice it, but that vest has a lot of pockets.
Did you also catch the necklace with the arrow?
Hawkeye's gift to Natasha, this arrow necklace. It's all in there. All the nostalgia is there. All the nostalgia for the Soviet Union, the Cold War is in there. Even though we are talking about the post-Cold War era, it still comes from that.
All right. So I'm going to follow this up with something that I immediately thought of too. If we look in Broadway and we look at Wicked, and so we have, you know, the two women who work together.
Mm-hmm.
And we take that to Frozen, where we have the two sisters working together. And now we have the Black Widows, where the two, you know, sisters are working together. Certainly, this is a trope that we can now follow. And where this will lead, I don't know. If we look at Dear Evan Hansen, that's getting ready to come out in movie form, that's two, they're not brothers, but two young men.
Mm-hmm.
Working together. Will that trope work in the male form, or is it only, you know, finding its I don't know, its growth through these the women?
The idea of sisterhood versus the idea of brotherhood. They're two very different ideas, aren't they?
Well, we'll see. We'll see how Dear Evan Hansen is received in September when it's released in movie form. I've been listening to the soundtrack as I've been driving around and going to meetings and stuff like that, which is interesting because, you know, COVID.
Going to meetings. Speaking of nostalgia, though, before we get into the future of everything, we need to go to the past a little bit. Kevin Smith, that Kevin Smith, not our Kevin Smith, Kevin Smith of Clerks fame, has given us a new thing to be excited about. He's given us the Masters of the Universe Revelation. It was released on Netflix on Friday, and or at least the first five episodes were released on Friday, and they were watched before Saturday. Let's put it that way, Chip.
So this is interesting. Was this meant to be two seasons? I mean, Netflix has done this before with the Get Out and stuff like that.
Yes, this is Netflix's new way of doing things. They take one story that is a 10-episode run, and they cut it into two 5-episode runs. So we've got the first half of this story, and we will see the rest of it soon.
So at the end of the fifth episode, does it wrap up, like set up for the, I don't know, the Empire Strikes Back type of part, or is it just like, well, this is just end and the story continues?
I am not going to spoil Masters of the Universe Revelation right now, Chip, because this is true character-driven storytelling. This is Kevin Smith's style, but certainly not Clerks style storytelling and characterizations. These characters are real, and yes, the final moment of episode 5 is a very strong moment that I will not spoil for anybody, but I recommend that everybody go and stream this on Netflix as soon as you can before you get spoiled.
So at the end of episode 5, is there a public service announcement to tell us about how to be good?
No, they did not go with that part of the nostalgia, but every other part of the nostalgia of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe is there. The thing that's changed is we actually have real characters. In the original story, we had these names, and that was the character. You had Stinkor, that was the bad guy that smelled bad. You had Triclops, the guy had three eyes. There were just these names that was all you needed. You needed the name so that you could beg your parents to go to the toy store and buy these toys. Kevin Smith has then now taken all of the writing ability that he has formed over the last 30 years, and he has made these characters so likable, so real, and we know them on a very deep level by the end of episode 5.
Wonderful.
And so Mark Hamill as Skeletor. So
he plays the Joker, right?
It's basically his Joker voice, but I'll take Mark Hamill's Joker voice over just about any other voice actor doing any other voice right now.
Is the Force with him?
The Joker. The Joker doesn't have the Force. He's got big hammers.
Are they killing younglings? Is he protecting them?
I am not spoiling the Masters of the Universe. Mr. Hessenflow. Go and watch it.
Well, there we go. Maybe there's something about midichlorians in there to help us out a little bit.
It's not a prequel. It's not Black Widow.
Okay.
I'm surprised there wasn't midichlorians in Black Widow.
So I got a chance to watch Capital in the 21st Century. This is based off of Thomas Pynchon's book. I guess it's 2019 is when the movie came out. And this is a story a little bit about what I'll say is how Europe views a market-based economy versus how the United States views a market-based economy. And it just is really interesting because many of the challenges that were brought up with capitalism as a European would view it certainly is a very different experience on how, like I said, the United States experienced it. And I think, you know, is it because they have an older culture or how like the French Revolution was very different than the American Revolution? This is an exploration, certainly a very thoughtful movie, a little bit based on where we were, say, 300 or 400 years ago, and sort of how wealth was built, and then maybe some of the challenges that we run into as, you know, we kind of move our way forward from the past to the future. So I highly recommend this. I actually watched this off Netflix, and I should have watched it a long time ago. But anyway, it's from 2019. I recommend it. I will say this is 60 out of 100.
Okay. Opening this week, we've got another superhero movie that seems to have been done before. This is The Suicide Squad this time.
Well, you know, that means third time's a charm, Steve. Third time's a charm.
So we've already had two versions of the Suicide Squad. The Will Smith one, where basically that was just Harley Quinn, right? And Will Smith was there. Harley Quinn is in this one, but it doesn't seem to be centered on her, does it?
Well, everyone loves Margot Robbie. Right. And she certainly plays this wonderful character. The Warner Brothers has never had a challenge with getting great actors to play parts. They've really struggled with story and tone and just making them enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they went over to Marvel and said, hey, listen, James Gunn, you made Guardians of the Galaxy, this obscure, I don't know, D, E, F level, maybe even further down the line than that, group of characters, and you made it a fun movie that everyone knows who Star-Lord is.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to come over to DC, owned by Warner Brothers, and you're going to make this fun movie. And all I can say is, I want to see more of this Weasel guy.
I just want to see Peter Capaldi. That's all I center on this movie is Peter Capaldi with things coming out of his brain. And I want to see the great actor, the fantastic actor, Peter Capaldi, alongside Idris Elba, who is a just an amazing actor. And seeing the two of them being silly in this nutty comedy, blow them up superhero movie. I go back to your question of, is the zeitgeist different? Have we gone past the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the DC movies? Are we still here for another version of the Suicide Squad?
So, Steve, I'm immediately thinking of Galaxy Quest, where our alien is sitting in front of the mirror going, I was a Shakespeare actor, and having a meltdown. And basically, the entire cast giving the same meltdown because he's given the speeches a million times. So Peter Capaldi, obviously an accomplished actor,
mm-hmm.
he's like, I am reduced to playing a guy with things out of my head.
Maybe.
So, because one, it's going to be very popular, and two, it's a paycheck. Mm-hmm. And three, James Gunn is going to make it very funny. So,
and we've got John Cena in here playing the real superhero type, right? The archetype for the superhero who's just so good that he doesn't understand. He's dumb. He's a dumb superhero, right?
He plays the clueless male. Who I'm thinking of? The guy from Emperor's New Groove.
Patrick Warburton, because you're thinking of The Tick. You're thinking of The Tick, where he played the Batman 66 character in a silly, clueless way. That's what I'm seeing John Cena playing in the Suicide Squad.
And John Cena plays the clueless guy who immediately asks a question about a starfish, Steve. And that looks like that is the hidden. They're going to fight the starfish. And for those of you who actually happen to know your comic book lore, the starfish, I think, was the Justice League's first opponent.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. There's a spoiler. I don't know if that's the case for sure, but right. I'm assuming with James Gunn, he just went pure bizarre and odd, and nice. Why not fight a starfish?
Nice. So this one, once again, is going to be in the theaters, and it's being released at the same time on HBO Max on August 5th. So you have your choice of going out or staying in to watch The Suicide Squad.
And we would like to just immediately say that that decision may be made for you. I mean, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. Boy, Chip, we read some great books over the last year.
We have read a lot of books over the last year. But you know what? You also read a lot of books that are not part of your book club. Steve, tell us a little bit about what you read.
Yeah, I, during the book club, was reading other books as well. And one of the books that was released in the last year was The Hidden Palace. This is a novel of The Gollum and the Genie, a sequel to The Gollum and the Genie, written by Helene Wecker. This is a phenomenal look at American culture through the lens of immigration. The idea of the Gollum and the Genie are these two mythical characters who come to New York City in the 1930s, because that's what people did, was they left their homes in Europe and the Middle East and traveled to New York City. And the ideal of America is this idea that we are a melting pot. Everybody came here from somewhere else, except for the Native Americans who we pushed out. But everybody else, we can form this new country based on everybody's different cultural values, and we can work together and become one nation.
Some people would say that's the reason why we have such great food here, Steve.
Food is definitely one of the many cultural pieces that Helene Wecker puts into her books about immigration, about the formation of America.
Particularly in urban areas where, you know, there's a large group of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And of course, they bring their wonderful foods with us. So is this a commentary on immigration? Is it a commentary on assimilation?
Yes, this is a story all about assimilation and how we should be treated and how we should treat others, because we're all different. We all bring something different to the conversation, and seeing it through the lens of these two mythic characters, a genie, you might be familiar with the idea of a genie. This is a Middle Eastern tradition idea of a creature that lives in a bottle. And when you rub the bottle, the genie comes out and it is your slave, in that it can't do anything unless you ask it to do something. So there's a commentary on slavery and ownership of people in this story. And then there's
Barbara Eden. I think that's who you're talking about, right?
That's all you think of. That's all you think of when you think of genies is Barbara Eden. There's, remember Aladdin? There's another Will Smith connection there. We won't get into that. The Gollum, you might be familiar with the myth of the Gollum. This is the Jewish tradition that says that a rabbi can build a person out of clay, and then they can put a prayer in the Gollum's mouth, and that prayer becomes the instructions for the Gollum. The Gollum will not do anything other than what it is told. So these two characters, the Gollum and the genie, they are both stuck. They can only do what they are told to do. And they are real, we'll go with the word people, and they have these feelings that they shouldn't do what the slave owner is telling them to do. They want to break out of that slavery. There's a lot of great conversations about how America was formed on the basis of people that had no choice here.
Well, and while many people, in fact, there's a book on caste that we'll eventually talk about, but think that there's a caste system in the world. If you were born in a certain socioeconomic or working class versus professional, any type of group overseas, you come to the United States, the idea is that you can rise above that. And in fact, the United States, I would say, is a great example where people do have the ability to rise to the level, whatever the market will allow them to grow to in many ways. And mm-hmm. So we do have the ability to where you, if you just receive discrimination at some place, wherever you're from, you come to the United States, and maybe you have that growth. You can have the success you're looking for. In fact, that's the American, quote unquote, American dream. Mm-hmm. The argument is whether that is really there for everyone. But I mean, the point is that many immigrants do come in literally with nothing, and they build, you know, a life here, and their children many times experience a greater life. In fact, you see it all around you. Whatever the latest group of immigrants is that's coming from that place. And, you know, within two generations, three generations, they are quote unquote American. The accents are gone. They're playing Xbox and they're drinking Mountain Dew, Steve.
Go. So. That's the story of the Gollum and the Genie. Absolutely. Playing Xbox and drinking Mountain Dew. This sequel is a wonderful exploration of a lot of those ideas. The idea of, with time, these two characters become American. They become something greater than they were in the first book. And that's exactly what happens here. This is a great sequel. It does not suffer from sequelitis at all. This is a definite fantastic story. The original Gollum and the Genie, if you haven't read that, I really highly suggest that. If we had continued the book club, we would have read the Gollum and the Genie in the book club, because that is a fantastic, again, character-driven tale about how we Americans should treat others and what we should expect for America. This sequel goes beyond that, goes to all of the aspects of these two characters, and the author had to do a lot of research to get this story onto paper. The years leading to World War I, there's a lot of activity happening in the world, including in America, and these characters go through that with us. I recommend The Hidden Palace.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. We have been to a convention, Chip.
Indianapolis has Indie PopCon each year. And we got a chance to go and make a whole bunch of interviews, Steve. We got to meet a lot of people dressed up. And we got to see the furries, Steve.
Your favorite part of conventions, seeing people in costume. That's great. We had a great time. We talked to so many great people. And everybody had the same thing to say. It's so wonderful to be out, to not be stuck at home after 16 months of lockdown, of pandemic, to be out and about, getting to see each other. And there was so much joy in that room.
One of the authors we met wrote 6 books during COVID. 6 books. 3 of them are out. And 3 of them are being under, you know, basically going through editing at this point. We had, you know, the Lego artist who basically came out and talked about his club that's available and just the incredible type of furniture he was making with Legos.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just the joyfulness of just being out. You could tell things weren't all the way back to normal.
Right.
Because, you know, the facilities are a little different and the scale of things and stuff like that. But the spirit was there. And I think that people are just wanting to have some, at a pop convention, if you could say normalcy, it's there.
That's the place to find normalcy, is at a pop convention. Nobody was wearing a mask except for Michael Myers.
Well, you know,
he had his Shatner mask on.
And that's going to be very interesting as other things start opening up right now. My kids had gone to a baseball game at the Cubs. And I asked, I said, was it full? And she goes, no, it wasn't full.
Hmm.
So we're still...
They call that a Sox game.
Chicago jokes never get old. The point being is that we are just all hoping for a return to the things that we love to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's certainly a tinge of a little bit difference right now. Which brings us to Steve. There are performance groups that are going around and their performances are continuing. We've got one from Chicago area that certainly is something very close to you, a riffing group, riffing on movies. Steve, tell us a little bit about what Down in Front is doing.
Yeah, our friends at Down in Front are coming to a live theater and going to do an in-person riff this Thursday, August 5th. They're coming to the Laugh Out Loud Theater in Schaumburg. You can get tickets at laughoutloudtheater.com and go to downinfrontlive.com for all the details.
Did you say Schaumburg, Steve? Schaumburg? Yep.
Yes. Your Chicago accent has gotten even better. We missed that for a year. There's so many ways to find information. Some of the things that we've talked about over the last 8 years involve privacy, and there's a new system for finding information and maybe, hopefully, working on privacy first.
A bunch of ex-Google engineers is basically what we would say. They've created a search engine called Neeva, N-E-E-V-A, and they're basically asking the question, hey, if Google was able to strip away the advertising, would you pay for that privacy?
Hmm.
So the question is for a search engine, would you be willing to pay $4.95 a month to know that you're not going to be tracked and you're not going to be targeted for advertising? the gentleman who put it together, the company CEO, says, this is a social experiment to see if people are willing to pay for it. People have talked a little bit about privacy. Many people don't care about privacy, but would you be willing to pay for it?
It's a great question. I pay CBS All Access to never see a commercial. That is valuable to me, to not have advertisements in my streaming service. Not having advertisements in Google, I honestly don't know if that is valuable to me. Having my privacy protected seems like an important thing. But how important? What is the numerical value to that importance? Would $4.95 a month, do I really believe that I won't be tracked the same way?
All right, Steve, I look for airline tickets fairly often. So I travel from one area to Chicago. And when I go to my search engine browser and I put in, hey, I'd like to have tickets, it's immediately tracking me. And I could get the sale. But they could know that, oh, I need to go and I could get a higher price. I mean, Amazon does the same thing. They could have 15, 20, 100 different prices depending upon how you look for products.
Wow.
And so the idea of being anonymous may mean that they don't know that you're looking for a particular product. You may get better pricing. You may not, but you could. And if we've learned anything from the election cycle, is if you can target particular people who are apt to believe certain ways, you could that may not be you and then it may not be me, but this group of people, they could sway an election. This is the 10% that, you know, basically may not be you or me, but, you know, I've targeted you. I have created an illusion through the information and how you're receiving that information, I could basically sway you to vote one way or another. So the idea is maybe you can move out of this bubble that, or this funnel that your search engine has brought you through, and maybe the Wild West just becomes the Wild West.
And maybe we've lost that in the World Wide Web because of all the targeted advertising. The idea here is intriguing, and I like the fact that the CEO has stated that this is a social experiment, just like the whole World Wide Web is a social experiment, and seeing what is possible with this tool that we're still learning about. Even 30 years into the World Wide Web, we're still learning what this tool can mean for humanity.
In fact, one of the books I've just picked up is basically talking about how the internet may have changed your brain. And there are, you know, you don't have to have this wide encyclopedic ability for facts. How powerful is trivia to a person when they have access to what potentially could be the right answer?
Right.
And the ability to research answers on any number of things where at one person you had a gatekeeper hold that information. I mean, how beautiful is it for the world? But at the same time, if you are constantly being, when I say manipulated, just think of it as a way of moving you to what they think you feel is the right answer. That may not be the unbiased, objective look that you're kind of looking for at times. So and that's there's good and bad. There's good and bad to this.
And that's what education has shifted, is the idea of teaching kids how to research and how to genuinely find the right answer, to actually use all of the data available and to assess that data for its validity. That's where we've gone in education. Instead of the trivia, there's no need for a multiple choice test where I'm asking you, you know, was the balloon red or green? The idea of deeper thinking is where we're going with it in education.
So I'll give you two areas that still have gatekeepers that are very difficult. If you have a sleep apnea and you want to either self-assess or buy products that allow you to address that, or if you need your heating and air conditioning and you want a price on what a heating and air conditioning unit would cost, they still are hiding that information behind gatekeepers. But for many things, I mean, if your car has a weird sound, look up weird sound car in your model, and you may find there's a whole group of people, and there may be some workarounds for that.
And on the car front as well, the pricing of cars has become much more transparent because of the World Wide Web. There's no more haggling, because I can search 12 different dealerships and find a price, and then I can bring that data to my dealership here, and that is the haggling.
Well, and just mentioning that, the price of used cars have actually gone up over this last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there could be any number of reasons for that. But regardless, I think this is an interesting premise. Will it take off? I don't know. I do think that this would be the perfect type of service that a company that gives lip service, particularly Apple, who gives lip service to privacy, you know, they should just incorporate it. So I'm using an example. If you subscribe to Apple Music or Apple Fitness or something like that, why isn't this the default browser on that? If privacy is important, why not make it just part of how you do things?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Steve, is anything coming up in the next week or so that could be of interest to our listeners?
Yeah, good idea. Let's start up our podcast again, because it's time to go back to school. I'm going back to school this week. It's time for the teachers to go back to school. The first year teachers are coming in at the end of the week, and students are coming back to school in my district on the 12th of August. So it is time. Thankfully, we're done with the pandemic and everybody can come back to the school safely.
Well, it doesn't look like that's going to be ultimately the case. We at least thought that. They're giving lip service to that. But right now, the CDC is recommending that we start wearing masks again. And that's even for vaccinated people in indoor situations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so because...
It looks like we're coming back to school fully masked once again.
Well, who is that masked man?
Yeah, that's what it looks like for me. And yes, the Michael Myers mask is my choice.
Is that the one you're going to wear? Now, Duke University is requiring masks indoors starting last Friday. Mm-hmm. Last Friday. And the CDC is basically saying today, this Tuesday, is going to be when they're recommending that we start wearing masks again. Obviously, that's been in the news. The reason for this is this Delta variant, mm-hmm. which was that swept through India earlier this year, is basically, it's very troubling right now. And last week, the U.S. went from one level of cases, and it just, I mean, it went up like a third in a day.
Wow.
And, you know, where it is when this is actually released, we don't know. But what I can tell you from listening to a doctor talk about that those that are unvaccinated are 99.5% more likely to die than those who are vaccinated. So if you get this new variant and they had to say, okay, let's roll the dice, and you are a group, part of the group that is susceptible, that could die, not having a vaccine means that you're much more likely to pass away. And so that doesn't mean that a person with a vaccine is immune.
Correct.
But that certainly reduces the chances. To me, it's very troubling because our real concern with it is not this Delta variant, which could be bad. It's the mutations that will happen from that. That basically means that those people who have been vaccinated, well, the booster is probably already on the shelf, I mean, coming out for you. That means that your current vaccine may not be ultimately effective going forward.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's this group of people that's really struggling with this. And how do you reach them to say, hey, listen, you need to be part of the vaccinated group too?
It is a challenging conversation that we've been having for a year and a half, and it will continue. And yes, the variance and the speed at which this thing is mutating is a little bit scary. We are not getting to living at the airport level. This is not Station 11, thankfully.
Station 11. Well, did we discuss that on Sandwiches at Irregular Hours, Steve?
Yes,
Professor Pamela Bedore?
Yes, that was one of our favorite books that we mentioned last week in our wrap-up episode of Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. You should really go and review some of those. If you haven't read some of those books, we really recommend them. And we're going to keep going with a book of the week here on Too Much Scrolling. So if you have book suggestions, we would love to hear from you and hear what you're reading and what you're watching along with us. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. Hopefully you're here with us. Welcome back to Too Much Scrolling. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenplum.
We'll see you in the future. What I wanna talk about is what I wanna thank you for, what I wanna